Success. We made it. Well, welcome,
yay,
everybody, to our Tuesday night celebration of life. How fun is this? Can you believe it? It's December. This is amazing. In just a few weeks, we're going to have holiday season and Christmas. And everybody's in Hanukkah now, and we've got New Year's coming up. And before you know, it's going to be December. I mean, January of next year, 2014. That is amazing. I just want to mention to everyone again tonight for a little housekeeping item. On the 24th, Christmas Eve, and the 31st, which is New Year's Eve, we will not be holding this call. We will have one next week and on the 17th, and then our next call will be in 2014. Well, it's great to be with everyone. Tonight we're going to talk about the first quality of an intentional creator. This is about connection with people. Now, we've been through this. Most of you who are on the phone have been through this a few times. I'd like to make this as interactive as we can. This is really the first thing we do to heal self-esteem. This is the most important practice in all ventures. Matter of fact, success is dependent on it. This is the secret. This is the secret to success, what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm going to talk about the assessment first, because I want us to review these measurements. And I'll see if I can add some additional information tonight that might be helpful. The greatest challenge we have isn't always just the measurements in the connection. It's our measurements in self-esteem, joy in the journey, and mental creation that sometimes get us preoccupied. And that preoccupation keeps us from being fully present with another human being. This is a major challenge. Major challenge. Because we're so preoccupied with all the stuff that's going on in our lives and trying to make things happen that often it's hard to be present here. We have somebody in the background who's making a lot of noise. If you could press *6 on your phone, that would be helpful, and then we'll just mute out your phone. Thank you, because we want to keep this recording very clean. We have a lot of people who aren't able to be with us on Tuesday nights who listen to this call during the course of the week, so we want it to be as clean as we can. That's why I like to leave it off of mute, if possible, so anybody can jump in at any time. So let's pull up your assessments. Thank you, by the way, thank you. Let's pull up our assessments, and just take a real heart-to-heart look at these measurements tonight to see if I can share some information with you, shed some light on this that is so important. Now, when a measurement is blue or green, blue is perfectly balanced, green is 98% balanced. When it's blue or green, it says we have an enormous capacity. Enormous capacity. It doesn't mean that this is a natural strength. It is when we are totally conscious, when we shut off the noise in our head, we're so capable. But sometimes we haven't been here very much. This first measurement is the second most important measurement in the assessment. The only one that's more important is one directly across from it, whole and complete. The question is, can we see the pricelessness, the uniqueness, the irreplaceability in ourselves? That's in self-esteem. The question is here, can we see it in others? Can we see it in others? And if this measurement is creeping into the orange, I just want you to reflect on a couple of things. Go back with me in time to any relationships you've had as a child, as a teenager, maybe it was a marriage, maybe you're in one now, where you have to be careful, you have to be cautious, or you may have been hurt. And when we've been hurt, seriously hurt in a relationship, sometimes we just kind of hold back a little bit. We care about people. We want to love them. We just want to be able to love them without surrendering us. That wall we have up is to protect us from getting hurt again. So tonight, let's focus a little bit on, if we have one of those walls, how can we take down this wall and connect with people without violating this safety zone that we're in? How do we do that so that we don't get hurt? How can we love somebody without having to give them all of ourselves. So that's the first measurement, empathetic. Respectful. Now, this is a complicated word. I've changed this word, by the way. We've got a new assessment coming out in the first quarter of next year. Oh, you'll love it, because each one of these areas, like connection, is a page by itself. And each bar has a lot of explanation on it. And you can click on it, and a pop-up comes up, and you can go as deep into that pop-up as you want to. So you can really get deep into the assessment. The respectful really is a question. How do we value a person's physical attributes, their physical attributes? In empathetic, we're valuing them based on their pricelessness, their intrinsic value. Here we're now valuing a person based on physical attributes, all these external things, their accomplishments, their contributions, their physicality, their height, weight, body mass, speed, anything about their body. So we got these skills, talents, contributions, all these outside things. Those are important things. But do we make them too important or not important enough? If they're not important enough, we may miss opportunities to notice what's important to a person. So just think about it. If you have a spouse or a companion or children or friends, do you ever miss opportunities to notice what's important to them? Because the hint is it may not be important to us. So we may not see it in them. We want to pay attention to these items because it feels really good when somebody notices us. Now we get to be the one who's doing the noticing. So just take a look at that measurement. That's one challenge. The other challenge is that we could get intimidated based on how someone looks. And we might be uncomfortable connecting with them. Like sweaty palms, dry hands, sweaty palms, dry mouth. I meant not dry hands, dry mouth. Just a little uncomfortable until we get to know them. And that's particularly true if you have a home-based business and you're trying to, quote-unquote, recruit somebody while acting like you care. That brings a whole other energy into this intimidation piece. So explore that today. The third option is that we might create expectations for how someone will perform and then be disappointed when they don't. And if you do this third one, if your thought processes want you to create those expectations and you're constantly finding yourself disappointed, we don't say, well, I got to lower my expectations of people. No, what we'll want to do is embrace our clarity. Our clarity. Become the patient teacher. And use the principles of intrinsic validation to step into their world. Find out what's really happening. What's really happening in their world? I mention that measurement and talk a lot about it because it is orange 92% of the time with anyone with that's entrepreneurial, home-based business or entrepreneurial. And it's kind of a split between the most common, creating expectations and being disappointed, and being intimidated. So just kind of get a pressure to reflect on your own life and say, which one of those shows up for me? Because this isn't who you are. This is just when you surrender you. Og says, I surrender my free will. I'm here in the observer's chair. I can see this person, the value, but when this thought process takes over, it wants me to focus too much or not enough, and it starts to create challenges for me. Now, a little bit up or down, a little bit over-focused or under-focused, not a big deal. When it turns orange, it's quite significant. So I want to pay attention to that one. Accepting. This is our ability to see a person's belief systems and see their beliefs and see how they behave and kind of see it in balance. Because nobody's going to live up to 100% of what they believe. It's just not possible. When this one starts to drift into orange, it almost always means I'm starting to look for what's wrong. Now, I want you to reflect tonight on why you might be looking for what's wrong. Because that's really where the answer is to this dialogue. Did somebody take advantage of you? Could it be that we put too much credibility into how they look and then they don't act that way, so we're a little judgmental? We might create that one. Or is it something that's been done to us that causes us to question? What could be the source of that dialogue if it's present? And ask yourself, we talk about mirror neurons. Remember that discussion? That person has mirror neurons. We show up, and their mirror neurons can read every muscle in our face, all 200 of them, every different combination possible, and communicate to their mind, release chemicals. They have a feeling before they have a conscious thought. If we show up and we're judging, no matter how much we try not to, leaks out on our face. It's discernible. Matter of fact, it's so discernible, the person's usually conscious of it. But if we're really good at hiding it, the mirror neurons will be. They're still going to feel uncomfortable. We can't be judgmental and get away with it. It's impossible. This is when Og says, how will I react to people, how I talk to people when I confront them? In only one way. In silence. And to myself, I will say, I love you. He talks about all the things that start to change. My eyebrows, my eyes, my voice tone, my face, everything starts to change. Because my heart and mind is congruent with, I love you. You can't be judging someone while you're saying silent to yourself, I love you. So if accepting is orange, we're going to play with that a little bit. I love you. Because we want to move the meter over, if you will, to balance. Because the truth of the matter is, there are some problems with people. There are some challenges that are serious that we want to be aware of and be wise. You don't want to put a rattlesnake in your sleeping bag. It'll bite you. If we're balanced, we see the good and the bad in balance. So when we get a red flag, a warning signal, we can know that it's accurate. If we're always looking for what's wrong at the exclusion of seeing what's good, we don't know. We really can't trust it. We'll still often act on it, but we really can't trust it. I want to bring this one back to balance. We do that by saying silently to myself, I love you. We can also bring it back into balance by playing red flags, green flags. Now, many of you have played this. It'd be fun to do it again, where you spend an entire week looking for the good in a person. And when you see it, you verbalize it. You see what's important to them, you verbalize it. You see something that's inappropriate or you don't like, they leave a sock out if it's a child, or they say something, or they don't do their job right, you bite your tongue and you don't say anything. Red flags, green flags. Green flags are the good things. Red flags are the bad things. And for a week, you do not speak one of the negative things. See how hard it is. Because truth of the matter is, if we're looking to what's wrong, we're trying to get this to swing back in balance. And just know that it's going to be hard not to look at what's wrong. Because that's where our habit of thinking wants to take us. So we're breaking a habit. Red flags, green flags will assist you. Silent to myself, I love you, will assist you. Tolerant. Tolerant is a measurement that says, can we see when a person's belief system is actually taking away from their value? This would be a radical terrorist, for an example. And it could be as simple as someone who does not know the relationship between work and effort and keeps wanting people just to take care of them. And they come to you asking for you to take care of them. And if tolerant is orange or red, there's a very good chance you won't see the risk in doing so. You'll just help them. Now, I'm not against helping. That's not what this is about. It's about helping without seeing the risk. Because after we've helped, then we have a conscious moment. We go, well, That ne'er-do-well. I lent him $100 last week, and he hasn't paid me back. Well, if we were conscious in the moment, we wouldn't have loaned it, or we'd have just given it, knowing we wouldn't get it back. Because that's who the person is. We would have seen the risks of doing it. Now, many of you like to save underdogs and help people. I love helping people. I think that's a great thing to do, so long as we do without strings attached and without expectation. Just let it go. Let it go. And if we can't do that, we want to be careful. Because sometimes when this measurement's orange or red, we'll actually help people at the risk of hurting ourselves. I remember a dear friend who used to, people would come to him. He was an attorney, and they'd ask him, I need to borrow money. And he'd always lend it to him. And I know at the time he had children who didn't have winter coats in the winter. He was putting his own family in harm's way to help other people. That's not being able to see the risk. So we want to be able to see it and make wise decisions. We may not be able to save the whole world. It's called a messianic complex, a messiah complex. When we are more intent on saving the world than being wise about how we assist. Now, this is a challenge when someone's got someone in their family that's like, struggling with alcohol or drugs. Now, I've got a good friend, Jason Coombs, who just wrote a book called The Prodigal Son. Chronicles his days living on the street as an alcoholic and drug addict. And how he used to call his mother and she'd come down and take him to lunch. And he was so kind and gentle and telling her a sad story and how he wasn't eating and needed food. And she'd reach in her wallet and give him money. She'd leave and he'd smile, go down to his junkie and buy a fix. That's all he wanted. His parents finally caught on, cut him off. Not because they didn't love him, because they loved him enough to not enable him. This is really a tough issue. I'm not an expert in this area. I don't want to propose that I am. You don't need to make any decisions based on what I've shared. Just if you've got the measurement tolerant orange or red, just know you're highly susceptible to saving someone or trying to save someone without seeing the risks of saving them. So be careful with that. Just and fair. This is a complex measurement. I was talking with a new client this afternoon, and he made a great comment. He talked about it in terms of, in my mind, I'm negotiating. When just and fair is orange, it almost always means that we have somebody in our life, personally or professionally, and they are draining us physically or emotionally or spiritually or financially. And we just don't know quite how to confront them because we're negotiating. Yeah, well, if I do that, they'll leave and I won't see them again, or at least they answer the telephone, or, yeah, I know, but I don't have time right now to retrain somebody. All the dialogue, this negotiation that's going on about why not to confront somebody. And so we generally don't. This is, remember the gunny sack? Hold the gunny sack in your left hand and the infraction in your right, and every time somebody does something wrong, we're holding this infraction, we're negotiating with ourselves, and we finally decide it's not worth saying something, so we put it in the sack. Then there's another one, it's not worth saying something, so we put it in the sack. We're negotiating, oh, okay, I'm going to say anything, put it in the sack. When the sack's finally full, and think about this in your own life, if you've had somebody like this in your life, you got the gunny sack so full of infractions, what do you do when the next one comes? Do you just walk away? Sometimes that's what we do. Or do you dump the gunny sack? This is when someone says to us, you know, why are you so emotional? All I did was, because we've given approval to all that past behavior. The idea is not to confront in the traditional sense of, why did you say that, or what's going on here? It's for us to learn a new way. This is a beautiful application of intrinsic validation. We sit down with someone. I notice that you've been late coming in for the last 3 mornings. Share with me what's happening. Well, Well, they might say, well, I've been out partying every night and I couldn't get up. Well, you might have the wrong person on the bus. Or someone says, well, my husband left me. I've had to take the kids to school and I'm responsible for everything in the morning. I'm so sorry, I just don't know what to do. To which we might say, would it help if we made your official start time 9:30 or 8:30 instead of 8? Oh, that'd be huge. Okay. Let's talk about, when do you need to leave to pick everybody up? I need to go here. Okay. You got a great employee, and they can only work a half an hour less than they normally would? How long might this be going on? Probably another month. You've been a great employee. You've been so faithful. So good. I'm going to ask you to just redouble your efforts during the 7.5 hours you've got. Get your 8 hours of work done. And don't worry about it for the next month. I can promise that employer, they'll get the 8 hours worth of work plus some just by stepping into the world. That's confrontation with intrinsic validation. Step into their world and we ask questions and we listen. And then we step into them and ask empathetic questions. Create a safe place and walls come down. We get to find out what's really going on. And if we can't do that with someone, of course, Og said we can melt all hearts. Like in the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. When we find out what is the motivation behind almost anybody else's behavior, most of the time, vast majority of the time, we find something we didn't know that helps us keep their inappropriate behavior in proper perspective. Otherwise, we could just react, terminate a relationship, fire a person, or continue to be angry. And all of a sudden, we find out what's going on, and our anger dissipates. Or we terminate them and get the right person on the bus. But just and fair, when it's orange, is all about this negotiation that's going on. It's awful. Because it robs them and us of the truth, of clarity, peace of mind. Last measurement, compassionate. Compassion. I've said this to you before. Passion means to suffer for something we love. Compassion, suffer with someone. Can we see somebody else's challenges? See their pain. And here's the clue. In spite of what we are personally experiencing. You know, I've used this example. I've got a broken ankle. They've got a blister. Why should I care about their blister? I've got a broken ankle. Well, this isn't about our broken ankle. This is about being able to see their blister and how it's impacting them. That's compassion. If our measurement's orange, I don't want you beating yourself up for saying, well, all I want you to do is go, what is going on in my life or what has recently happened that has me so preoccupied with my own pain that it's hard to see somebody else's? Of course, unless it's more serious, then it's easier to see. But what might be keeping me from that? What's happening? What am I dragging around in my sack that's keeping me from doing that? Well, these are most often great strengths. And the most important part in the new assessment, it talks about the objective is to be empathetic. And the definition reads like this. When we are being our true self, we are empathetic. When we are being our true self, we are accepting. And then what that means. Question. What unhealthy habits of thinking are trying to rob us of this characteristic? That's the question. Again, with empathetic, has there been a past relationship? Are we in a job where people were just exhausted dealing with people? Respectful, are we so focused on those outward appearances that we're intimidated or create expectations? Accepting? Are we looking for what's wrong and finding it? Tolerant? Are we not seeing the risks and then being resentful? Just and fair? Are we negotiating all the time and living with this frustration that's just draining us? compassion? Can we see another person's pain, no matter how small it might be to us? Can we see how painful it is to them? If we're in that space, being able to do this, we are perfectly positioned to exercise the greatest secret of success in all ventures, agape love. That's where we are. Now, before we go into that, is there anybody's got a question about their assessment that I could serve them about this area or any other area in your assessment that you've been thinking about or reflecting on? Anybody have a question that I could answer tonight or attempt to answer?
Good evening. I have a question.
Good evening.
It's Catherine.
I was going to say it sounds like Catherine.
It is. Just with this last bit that you've been talking about, I think I'm a pretty empathetic kind of person, and I'm, you know, caring and listening and work to get into another's world to, you know, understand what's going on. And I'm just thinking of a situation, a couple of situations, and trying to, like, as I have learned more myself about victim consciousness and whether I'm kind of operating in victim consciousness or not, you know, it's not a great place to be sitting. And I'm just thinking of a situation of having talked with a friend just the other night, and I can just see how this person is just so into, you know, the situation that's happened and all the stuff they have to figure out from it, and, you know, just, you know, and complaining about it and going on and on. And I feel like if I'm, you know, get into that world, that I'm just getting sucked into a little vortex that I don't really want to be in. So how can I be, you know, compassionate and caring, and certainly, you know, not that I don't want to hear what's going on with them, but it's like, okay, let's move on to something else and change our perspective. And obviously I can't make people do that all the time, but thoughts?
That's a powerful question. Especially around the holidays when sometimes you're almost obligated to talk to people. I mean, choice, they're family members. Let me give you a couple of thoughts. Question number one, or comment number one. Intrinsic validation is about awareness and accuracy. It's not about naive kindness. In other words, if you're with a victim and all they want to do is every time you're there, because you look like you've got a little bit of energy, suck your energy dry. You know, energy vampires, some people have called them. Energy sucks, other people call them. If that's, and it's not serving them, you're not really getting anywhere other than you leave empty every time. The question is, do you want to be there in the first place? It's a tough decision. But the question is, do you really want to step into the world if that's what you know is going to be the outcome? Maybe you keep that conversation a little more superficial. You don't step into that person's world because you're just going to walk into a quagmire of negativity. So be careful. Be wise. That's one.
But
number two,
yeah,
sometimes
may I respond
sure,
to a little bit of that? Because
absolutely.
You say, I don't think it's that person's intention. I think it's their unawareness. And I can think of a, even for myself, it's like, you know, if there's not much going on in my life and I'm feeling, you know, sometimes having a big event is like, okay, there's actually something to talk about and whatever, even though it's, you know, sort of going on and on complaining about how it's unfolded. And so I don't think there's an intention to be that. And so there's part of me that goes, wow, I used to be like that too, and I'd love to, you know, raise some awareness. But sometimes it begins to feel like the only option is to leave, you know, if it's not my place maybe to even, I don't know how receptive they, you know what I mean? Anyway, I'll leave that.
Yes. Well, that was the second issue, because you used the word victim consciousness, and I wrote down on a piece of paper, victim unconsciousness.
Okay.
Right. So the second question is, Are they a close enough friend that you could step into their world and create a safe enough place for walls to come down to have a conversation about this? It's possible. You can't go with judgment. You absolutely have to go with love. Well, tell me more about that. Share with me what happened. And they finally feel safe sharing. And the question is it serving you to go into this place? I'd love to listen to it, but we've talked about this 5 times now. And I'm just worried for you that you're going to get stuck here and not get past it. Is this serving you? Now, if you're going to leave anyway, you're not intending to offend. You're intending to serve. You can't say that hard thing till the walls are down. Because if you do, it's like a sledgehammer against a wall. That's number two. Number three, there are some times in people's lives and for a season that they really need to have someone listen. They need to have time to process through something. And one or two conversations may not be enough for them. There might have been a day, Catherine, when somebody has said something like that number two option and you just shut them out. That's usually what we do. We're offended by that kind of a comment. We're not ready to hear it. So the question could be, are you ready to do something about this? I'm happy to listen. But are you ready to do something about this? Third option is you just listen. You just listen and you know that you've fed them, you've encouraged them, so everything is positive. Oh, you're a wonderful person. You'll get past this. There'll be a day when you look back and this will be a great memory for you. Or whatever you want to say that's uplifting and encouraging and positive. You bring the positive energy. Now, the challenge comes that if we're feeling drained ourselves, it's really hard to engage in that kind of a conversation over and over and over again. So I'm back to the first comment I made. Is this a family member where blood is thicker than anything else, and we have an obligation to be there that we can't really break? Or is this something we can choose? I can tell you to go to a website. It's called, let's see if I can pull it up real quick for you. Garbage Man's Guide. Garbage Man's Guide. And click on their blogs. There's a blog on this topic about the holiday season particularly, about being wise, about setting boundaries for yourself to make sure you're healthy, that you've got sufficient energy for you to be healthy. So sometimes we have to make tough decisions. And if our accuracy is telling me this drains me and I don't have energy for it, and it's really not going to do any good, then why do I do it? That's naive kindness. We don't need to be naively kind. Those are your three options. In this case, reflecting on what you know, which would serve this person best, and you?
Well, I love that question. You know, does this serve you? You know, I'm happy to listen, and but you drag yourself down around and around in this. Does it serve you? And in the latter scenario that you just said, you know, I open the invitation. I do a fair bit to keep up the friendship. Or, you know, I continue to extend the friendship. And so, you know, in little doses, it doesn't drain me. And I feel like even just extending a friendship, you know, offers some service in that way. And I wouldn't do it if it didn't, you know, if it was just like, no, I don't want to go there, but I do want to go there.
Okay. Well, there's your option number three. There's nothing wrong with option number three, so long as you're consciously making the decision. Because you don't want to be naively stepping into her world like you would, like you have to do that with everyone. No. You get to choose who you do this with. You don't do it with just everybody. You choose. It's your choice.
And I guess I could do that with some expectation if my awareness and skill is enough to be at the place that, you know, to be conscious of creating the safety to allow the walls to come down and see whether raising some consciousness is serving, because that's part of what I feel like I do on the planet.
And the most important thing we learned,
Catherine. But then if it's not, I guess I just can't stay there.
Yeah. And the most important thing we always learn, all of us learn, by going through this process and saying which of these three options would best serve them and me. Them and me. What would be the best option? The most important thing we can do is to look inside and ask, do I ever show up like this?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm unconscious, do I ever show up like this with people? And what would that be like for them to be having this conversation about me? And what could I do next time I'm with people to bring energy to the conversation and not take it away? What could I do to be conscious when I walk into a room that I'm adding, wow, your beautiful hair, it's great to see you, and how you doing? Because we can all, and I can speak boldly about this, because if Ramona got on the phone with us, we could have a fun conversation. We can all have a certain amount of victimhood in us. Oh, man, I've been going for 14 hours today, and I'm exhausted. And, you know, it's almost comical when I think about it. What would it be like for you, sweetheart, if I showed up in this moment the way I did on the coaching call the night at 7? Ramona just raised her right eyebrow and just kind of smile. She doesn't see very much. But we want to become conscious of how are we showing up. So I've shared this before on the call, but it's, in this context it may be helpful, that most people that are in victim unconsciousness, I can use that if you're okay with that, unconsciousness, have a tendency to have respectful over-focused. In other words, they see people, and the person looks okay. So it's like, and it's not even conscious, it's almost, because they're not conscious, but it's like I could take some energy from them. They would listen to me. They'll hear my sad stories. I can cry on their shoulders. The drama is, we're addicted to the drama. We kind of love the drama when we're victims. It's just, and then the person doesn't give us much back. And we get terribly resentful. You know, why didn't they care about me? Why didn't they want to listen to me? Then we find the next person. They look okay. And we do the same thing to them. When we finally become conscious as a victim, that's when we realize that that person was holding up a facade and they were almost empty to start with. And they gave me every ounce of what they had left. And I was angry with them for not giving me more. That's one. So I share this with victims that are struggling so that they can see this more consciously. Second of all, these, we call them peanut payoffs. We actually think people are feeling sorry for us. They may act like it while we're there, but when we turn around and walk away, they stick their finger down their throat and go, ugh. We're not fun to be with. We drain people when we're in victim mode. People don't want to be around us. We think they do. They act like they care, but no. That's not where they really are. So when a victim finally sees how their victimhood actually is showing up in the lives of other people, they actually start to care about that other person's experience, that is a huge wake-up call. Third item, some of us are so addicted to our drama that it's one of those things that's in our sack. You know, we empty our sack, the Chicago Dream, and we pick this up and we go, I don't really want to engrave this on my heart. I want to drag this around because this is my excuse for why my life is where it is. This is my excuse for not working or not doing or not calling or whatever it might be. This is my excuse. How could I give away my... If I don't have an excuse, what am I going to do if I don't do it? Then I'm just a bad person. That's how we're thinking in our self-esteem. Then I would just be a bad person if I didn't have this excuse. And so we cling on to our excuses. That's one of the reasons why people get stuck in this victim mode and can't leave. Because what would I blame if I didn't blame this anymore? What do I have left to blame? And we're looking to find reasons for why we're not where we want to be instead of ways to get to where we want to be. Instead of staying in creation and focusing on whatever it's going to take to get there and willingly diving in and doing that work, victims spend their time looking for reasons why they're not doing it. It helps justify the non-action. That's victimhood. Now, lastly on the topic from me, are there some horrific things that can happen to people? What do you think, Catherine? Almost rhetorical, isn't
Absolutely.
It? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Horrific things that can happen. And there are times when people are absolutely in pain and mourning, and we need to be there with them and hold them up and sustain them. I've got a new coach here in town whose husband has a construction business. And the week before Thanksgiving, their superintendent of the construction sites was driving home, hit some black ice, killed him, 38 years old. Young wife, 38 years old, and two autistic children.
Oh, my goodness.
Is that a horrific experience? Oh, my. I can't even begin to imagine what they're going through, what his wife is going through, and those two boys are going through. That's when you support someone. Oh, someone 30 years later is still wanting everyone to show up and take care of their emotional needs over that, that would be a problem. We want to get past the mourning state and get back into the creation state. That's the owning our clay, whatever that clay is, and creating the most we can with our clay. But victims want to look at their clay and say, well, my clay's like this because of this, and because of this, and because of this. And they want to spend all their time complaining about how inadequate their clay is instead of taking it and creating the most they can with it. It's a function of blame versus creation. But there are horrific experiences, and we want to be sensitive to those moments. That's an interesting topic. I've done a little bit of coaching on this topic, and it's always extremely tender. Because even if someone's addicted to being a victim, and it's been a long time, and it's holding them back, and it's destroying their friends, still terribly painful to the victim. We want to be extremely careful, the decision we make, that one, two, or three I gave you, that if nothing else, let us all remember when we were in victim mode. And someone cared enough to listen to us. And maybe we're doing nothing more than giving back to the universe for the time we took. It could be that simple. But be wise. Don't get yourself drained physically and emotionally. Because sometimes we are very fragile ourselves. I want to be very careful. Catherine, thanks for taking us here tonight.
Thank you.
It's a part of this section. In the book, there's a chapter on it. If anybody wants to turn to their book, Today I Begin a New Life, they can find this chapter in this section on connection with people. It's on page 86. We haven't spent very much time on this on a Tuesday night, so thanks for letting us go there. Anything else I can do to be of service to you tonight?
No, thank you. Fabulous.
Anyone else tonight, as you're listening to this, thinking about your own life, you know, those things we're dragging around in our sack, sometimes we don't want to look at them because they're too painful, sometimes we don't look at them because that's our excuse. It might be a great thing for us tonight as a group to empty our sack for a moment, all those things we drag around, and ask ourselves, What in this sack don't I want to give up? What is my fear around giving it up? What is my fear of what I'll have to do if I do give it up? But if I don't have an excuse, what am I going to do then? This is a great pivotal moment, because what we discover is that when Og says, today I begin a new life, that's what you do. If you let that go, I'm beginning a new life. Today I shed my old skin, which had too long suffered the bruises of failure and the wounds of mediocrity. Today I'm born anew. And my birthplace is a vineyard where there's fruit for all. We discover that that which we're afraid to let go of is the very thing that's been holding us back from realizing the very dreams we have. Because we can't hang on to those issues and blame them for not having and create our dreams. They're two opposites. They don't fit. They're incongruent. So we have that anxiety of letting it go. And we're born anew. And we find a whole new exciting life. We didn't lose us. We let go of the habit of thinking. We let go of the past issue. We grave it on our heart. Now we stand in somebody's path. And if anybody here, I said it a moment ago, if anybody wants to know why I can speak so passionately about victimhood, because I'm a master victim. This is an area I've had to work very hard on. So I've kind of earned a right to speak so boldly about it, to say, hey, victims out there, maybe on the phone, who is one who spends their time with this and blaming the past? I just want to wrap my arms around you and say, oh, if you could just trust me about what is possible and let it go, then you'll be able to talk to other victims with confidence, and you'll be able to create those things you want to have in your life. That is so powerful for you to be able to do. So let's do that this week. Let's empty that sack. Let's take a look and say, wow, what would happen if I let that one go? Whew. How scary is that? Any other questions anybody might have tonight? Anybody else I can serve?
Dave, this is Diana.
Hi, Diana.
I just wanted to thank Catherine for her question, and also to you for the answers that you gave. I had a situation this week that I didn't know if I did the right thing or not. I had a customer who was an incessant talker, and she dumped on me, and I didn't know what to do. It's like I kind of fought with it all week, whether I did the right thing or not, and I chose to listen to her even though she was draining me. But something inside of me said, just give her a few minutes. She just needs to talk. And so I'm feeling like I did the right thing. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And we can all make up the time we gave by not catastrophizing about so many things. Right? That wasn't directed to you, Diana. You know, we worry about so many things. I remember a client was sitting in my office one day, and I said, what would happen if you stopped worrying? He said, I'd become non-existent. I saved 3 hours when I stopped worrying. 3 hours a day, I know, at least 3 hours a day. So let's stop worrying listen for that length of time and say, okay, I listen for 30 minutes, so 30 minutes a day, I'm going to stop worrying about something. And you won't have lost a minute. be a good trade. Well, thank you. And I thank Catherine, too. She always asks great questions, so thank you for taking us down that road. We just have a couple more minutes. Does anybody else have a question tonight?
Yeah, Dave, this is Kat.
Hi, Kat. Great to hear your voice.
Hi, great to be here. I too want to thank Catherine. That was such a profound question, and it certainly is what a lot of us struggle with. And I think it ties into, I looked at my assessment and saw that, you know, connection, I connect with people pretty well for the most part. I find that all to my detriment, a lot of times I'll put other people first and my care and concern for them. So much so that, you know, right now I'm kind of struggling with this emptying of the bag that you speak of, and it's like, well, how does my setting myself free and doing a new beginning, how does that affect the people I love around me, and what kind of perceptions? And you know, you almost can't do that sometimes without hurting others, you know, in a way, because, you know, they see you in a certain way and it's safe for them to see you that way or to have you be a certain way. And I think of my relationship and with my husband and with my family and thinking about, you know, how sad I am on some things and how I'd like to let go and be, you know, certainly less burdened, I guess, and you know, stop some of these fear patterns and these sabotage patterns that keep me or hold me back from really moving in the direction I really, my heart wants to go. Then all of these other things come up about how it affects my relationships and you know, some of the concern that might be there. And even to the point of perhaps anger, seeing me change and seeing me want to do different things or declaring that I'm going to start things and be different. How does, I hope that makes sense.
Oh, it makes all sense in the world. I pulled up your assessment real quick. Just take a look at mental creation, the measurement honorable. So I mentioned in this opening of this section, before we went through these measurements, that the challenge isn't always in the measurements of connection. It's how our other measurements are impacting it. Because
right.
You do have an enormous capacity to connect. But you've got an expectation of yourself to do it perfectly.
Yeah.
That just puts a tremendous responsibility on you. And it is exhausting. And you can feel that effective measurement in your world of being almost in frenetic, non-goal-directed activity, because instead of having a plan and working it, it's like I'm trying to solve everybody else's problems as they're coming at me, giving myself to all this stuff and all these things that need to be done, and I'm not really intentionally moving my life forward. That's a risk. I'm not saying you're not, but that's a risk. I may not be doing that because I'm not setting a clear plan and executing it, because in that plan would be intrinsic validation, but also be some boundaries and making sure that we can set those properly so that you can use your time, not just use it all, but use it effectively. Now, you've got an incredible assessment and connection. Whew. And for many of you, look at self-esteem. Everybody look at self-esteem. Because if we've got any really painful measurements in self-esteem, we might feel that our worthiness as a person comes from giving ourselves to someone else like that. We're trying to somehow prove that we're a good person. That can be exhausting. Because we'll never get that hole filled, even intrinsically validating someone. Because we can't bring that dialogue into the reason why we're doing it. We want to do this because we want to, and get to, and choose to. Not because we need to do it perfectly, not because we need to do it to prove we're okay. Those are very painful and exhausting kinds of measurements. The risk hat is this, that when we finally have this awareness, instead of having us validate our own worth and letting go of the need to be perfect, we might actually stop serving. We'll let the pendulum swing the other way. Okay, that exhausts me, so I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do something that doesn't exhaust me. But we still have the thought processes that created the problem in the first place, so we're still exhausted. And we're not doing it. So focus on the thought processes that make it exhausting and work on them. Don't necessarily change the activity, because you're so good at this. you'll just get better at doing it for the right reason. Because if it's done correctly, this is what you know. If we're intrinsically validating someone for the right reason, we are the beneficiary of all that cooperation and productivity they had dammed up behind their wall of resistance. We'll actually feel it. We'll feel the walls come down. It's like there's just a whole dam. It's like a dam holding back a whole bunch of water. And when the walls come down, the water just floods over us. So joyful. And it fills our soul. That's when we know we're intrinsically validating for the right reason. Because if we're doing it to prove ourselves, we really don't get the benefit. We're there for the wrong reason. It's just exhausting. It leaves us empty. So keep doing it, but keep adjusting any thought process that has you doing it for a reason other than just to love them, just to find out about them, to be curious about them, to step into their world and discover and to validate them and see them smile and come alive and pay back incredible generosity because they just feel so connected to us. That's how you'll know. Because if it's tiring, exhausting, using a powerful gift with an intention that won't support it. I hope that helped a little bit. Is that too confusing? You okay with that?
Well, it certainly helps in part. You know, you're right on relative to the exhausting piece of it. You know, what really rang true was the non-goal-directed activity as well. I struggle with that. Always feeling a bit like, the pinball machine.
Just keep asking yourself, what am I trying to prove? What am I trying to prove? Because, Kat, you're priceless. You're irreplaceable. You are unique. No matter what you do, it has nothing to do with doing. It's just, as a human being, that's who you are. Big deep breath. Many of us are in this cycle of creating expectations, they're unmet, they cause frustration. And then we beat ourselves up and, what's wrong with me? Why? I can almost touch it. I can almost taste it. Why can't I have it? Why is it not working that way for me? And usually it's the expectation of perfection or how something will be done, and we put expectations in how people will perform. Then we get frustrated when they don't perform that way. Go right back. Most of you can go back to mental creation, to those measurements, and find the answers to the challenge. Because that's what drives, case of yours, Kat, that's what drives that effective measurement. Because behind that mathematics and effective, the mind is just trying to figure out how to create today what it already has as a reality. Effective is intangible reality. This is in real time. It's trying to figure out how to have today what your mind is already living. And so there's this constant battle going on between where your mind wants you to be and where you actually are. If you just rotate back and forth, I'm rotating my hands back and forth, my two fingers, index finger, middle finger, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You can almost feel this frenetic energy going, and it translates into busyness. And exhausting.
Yeah.
Well, wonderful. Well, everybody, thanks for being here tonight. We've gone places we haven't gone before in this depth in terms of connection with people and intrinsic validation. Spend some time going back to the book and to your intentional creation studio, to quality number one, and listen to those measurements about finding the good and listening for doors and stepping into someone's world and be more intentional. And be conscious about your intention for being there, about lifting, building, and see if you can't create a moment or two in the next week where you can feel the walls come down, the cooperation flood out, and start to feel what that tastes like, what that feels like, how it can fill the void in your soul. That is the greatest secret of success when we do this. Because we can't sell somebody something when their walls are up. This doesn't work. We can't enroll them in our vision when their walls are up. But if we care enough to get the walls down first, then that's the secret. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a great night, and be back with you next Tuesday. Just come off of mute and say good night, please.
Thank you, Dave. Good night.
Good night, Dave. Thanks a lot.
Good
Thank
night.
You. Good night, Dave. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.